Welcome everybody to your favorite day of the week. I'm Anton Irwin. I'm joined by Adam Mattis. We are Locked On NBA's Friday edition. We have a fun show in store for you guys.
Always Adam, fun, Anthony. You don't even have to, that's redundant. It's always fun. I mean,
it's even more fun because the Lakers are about to right the way.
What did I say? Why did I open my mouth?
All right, so today's
we'll see.
We are going to have we usually try to, you know, segment these things out and try to outline and pretty thoroughly plan the show. But on this one, we're going to change it up a little bit. We're going to have more of an open-ended conversation in segments one and two about the series, about what it means for LeBron, about what it means for the way that we look at these Lakers, how we feel about Anthony Davis. The Lakers are on a pretty insane run right now that you don't see from most teams ever. So we're going to talk about that. And then in segment three, we are going to, seeing as it feels like we are looking at maybe the beginning of one of these kind of insane duos that the NBA tends to produce, we are going to rank the best duos of the last 20 years, dating back to the year 2000. So let's go ahead and start, though, with this series, what a win for the Lakers might mean, what a handy win, you know, if they win handily, what that would mean for them to this point. And Adam, I think it kind of starts here where we have to find the balance between do we think that all of the teams that the Lakers have played are flawed or super flawed, right? Or have the Lakers made them look that way because we underrated them in the first place? I personally, and I say this as a Laker fan, homer, whatever you want to call me. I don't know.
Right.
I legitimately don't know.
I think it's going to be tough, I think, given the injuries to this final series and also just to how game one looked. I mean, series can change on a dime, especially in the bubble. And I do feel like we are about to get a little presumptuous here and just assume that the Lakers are going to steamroll the Heat because it sure feels that way. It's hard to even trick yourself into thinking it might not be that way, but series do change. But should that happen, I think you said it right. There's a little bit of a balance here because I do think that the competition this year and the bubble and all of that has been a little bit less than normal. But at the same time, Lakers have three losses. They have a lot of big wins, and they look to be growing better as this playoffs goes on. I mean, I thought that game one in that series was probably the best the Lakers have looked in this bubble so far. So I think it's a little bit of both. What I really think it comes down to is that LeBron James is really good. Anthony Davis is really good. And those guys have about a full season under their belt now. And that's what happens when good players come together. They get better the more chemistry they gain.
And this pairing especially, like we've seen obviously some fantastic duos, and we're going to talk about this over the course of the third segment especially. It's something we're going to focus on. But I can't recall a duo that fit and made each other better players in the way that LeBron and AD do, where not only are they two top five talents in the NBA, but also you can use both of them in sets. Usually it's like it's a pair of wings and they take turns in isolations. It's Kobe and Shaq or Magic and Kareem, where it's Kobe's possession here and then Magic Kareem's possession over here. KD and Steph, I think, is a version of this because their spacing made it so much easier for everybody else. But I don't know. This kind of struck me, especially over the course of these playoffs, that both LeBron and AD elevate each other's games. And when you're talking about two top five talents who are both elevating each other's games, it makes the Lakers look super dominating when they actually are really engaged on defense. And I agree with you that there are some mitigating circumstances that make this bubble and the teams that the Lakers are going up against, it's a different run. I'm not willing to call it weaker because at every step along the way, there's been analysis. Well, this is why the Lakers should fear this team. And this is why the Lakers should fear this team. But I think it's a different run.
But it's also both. I think it's a little bit of both, though, Anthony, because one of the things I think everybody is also learning alongside all this is that the Lakers are really good and their best is pretty elite. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The thing that's tough about the Lakers, I think, is they weren't sustained excellence all year. Yes, they were the number one seed, but they didn't look like a they didn't right now in the last, like, I don't know, five games of the playoffs, they've kind of started to look more and more like one of those elite teams and that elite duos, but it hasn't always necessarily been the case. But I think what you're seeing with, when you're talking about the duos with LeBron and AD, it's all, there's only one or two teams, or I should say maybe five or six players in the entire NBA that match up with LeBron physically, and then mm-hmm. also are close enough to him in skill set that they can be like a Kawhi Leonard. Okay, there's one guy. There's only a handful of guys like that, and most teams don't have them. Same goes for Anthony Davis. There's only so many guys that physically match him. But then how many guys physically and also talent-wise match him? Maybe a Giannis. So there's just not that many guys out there total, and there's no teams that have both, and I don't know that there will be. So you're just starting from such an enormous advantage, both from a skill set, but also just from a – you got to have the right sized and bodied people to be able to even throw out those guys. And it's been special. Anthony Davis, the other thing about him in this playoff run is he is playing with more confidence than I think I'd ever seen him. And I think that that's one of the things that I think probably in the coming years will be tested most from him specifically. But because I don't know that he ever got in a position where we ever had to question his confidence. They haven't really been behind in a series other than 0-1 in the first round.
Yeah.
And so there's those types of little questions along the way, but when you're steamrolling teams and you're up, you get to play with an enormous amount of confidence, and a confident AD right now is just looking unguardable.
The way that he's shooting from the mid-range, you know, that's what you say every step along the way. I think the one bit of analysis that I felt was the fairest was, hey, at some point is AD's shot going to come back to earth? Like, at some point does he – these shots that he's getting, and I still kind of, quite frankly, am a little nervous about that, because if it happens, then the Lakers become a very different team to guard. Now, we're talking about a Miami Heat team that, you know, Goran Dragic is doubtful to play. Bam Adebayo is doubtful to play.
It really Jimmy doesn't Butler look like looked they're hobbled get tested.
After that ankle injury. So, like, I don't know if it's necessary. It would even matter if AD's shot came back down to earth. And that's where, like, you know, you don't think of this looking back after a team wins a championship. Generally, a championship is a championship. But I think that's where the people who were saying, yeah, this is a different run for the Lakers, would have a case. Because this would be – this is one of the biggest betting favorites that we've seen in a finals in quite some time. And on top of that, their top three players all go down in the first game. Right. Like, I could see why somebody's saying, like, well, great, cool, fantastic.
That being said, you can only play the teams in front of you. I mean, there's nothing you can take away from the Lakers on this. I think the big key is that, you know, we're talking about Anthony Davis sort of playing. I don't know if you can say make a leap, because he's in position to show all of his talents, and he hasn't skipped a beat now that he's been sort of put in that position and against the best competition in the NBA. I mean, in playoffs, the further you go, the more you get guys that should be able to handle you. LeBron James is the one for me, because you and I both talked about this, and while we always thought LeBron had another gear in him, it's just there was a lot of times this season and then these playoffs where you thought, okay, here comes the LeBron game, and it never happened.
In that Denver series especially.
In that Denver series, there was game three and game four, and you kept thinking, okay, here's the LeBron game, and it didn't happen until game five, and then it happened. And then in game one, it happened again. And by the way, when we're talking about him not being well, we mean he looks like one of the best players in the NBA. When he plays – when he does,
is LeBron okay? Gear, he only had 24-8-7.
Right, is even better than that. There was games that was like 30-10-10, and you kind of looked at it and you go, okay, but he just doesn't look like he quite has it again. In game five of the Western Conference Finals, he looked like, I mean, it was one of his best games he's ever played. And then in game one, he looks so in control. And it's funny when we talk about some of the greats and how they go through different stages of their career and what they look like in their final stages. LeBron this year has been an elite defender. And he has been an incredible point guard more than anything else. Yeah. A point guard, a guy that just runs the show. And I think part of what we're seeing with him is we're judging him through a different lens. And sometimes when you do that, you don't realize that, hey, he's actually a new type of great, not less great, a new type of great. And you're judging him on the expectation of him being the number one scorer, aggressor type guy. Well, right now he's setting the table for his teammates like he's always done, but at an even higher level. But more importantly, he's setting the table for his elite big man sidekick. And and look, it's having enormous success.
Let's take a quick second here, because I want to talk about AD. I want to pick up right actually from where we're leaving off in regards to expectations, because I think that frames a lot of the way that we look at both AD and LeBron. And that, like, you look at them, you're like, yeah, those guys should dominate. Those guys look like the total package. They should have, they should be. And I think that sometimes skews the reaction when they do dominate. So let's take a quick second, come back, and we'll talk about that, what this means for AD. I might offer up a hot take. I don't think it's a hot take, but we'll see what you feel about it. We'll come back to that. Would you rather start with my hot take that I don't think is a hot take, or pick up with the expectations talk?
I think the hot take. Let's get the hot take right out the gate here.
All right.
All your takes are hot, though. You don't have to preface this, dude. Like, you always do this. I gotta
stretch.
Wow.
Get my back already.
It's going to be terrible.
I think Anthony Davis is the most talented player in the NBA.
Yeah, this is talented. So you phrased it in a weird way. I disagree. I'll disagree. I mean, okay. Again, this is – I hate when there was that hilarious tweet on the timeline I saw the other day where somebody said, we're taking LeBron for greatness. Like, no, we're not. We literally show the highlights of his, like, misses.
All the time. Like, yeah, we're taking
–
never take LeBron James for granted. I promise. The five tweets that tell us not to take him for granted are enough to promise that we ensure we are not taking this guy for granted.
But here's where you are taking now LeBron James for granted. He's done this now 10 times. He's done this more often than he hasn't done it, gotten to this point. Anthony Davis has never gotten close to this point. And yes, he's playing great on the stage. And I think he is easily one of the best and one of the most talented players in the NBA. But let's not forget that LeBron has done this. Until it's not LeBron, we just can't put anybody else up there. Now, guys like Kawhi Leonard, who I thought had a claim to that, maybe fallen off that list. And now you can put AD in that spot. Kevin Durant, we're going to have to wait and see another year. You know, there's another guy like that that's basically 7 foot. How talented is he? I mean, how do you compare that? So there's a couple other guys there that I think are in that conversation. But I'm sorry, what LeBron James is doing, he's done this so many times. And it's not a surprise that AD is looking like the best version of himself alongside LeBron James.
That's the part that even I have a hard time isolating in a way that we can actually have this conversation, right? Now, we did see flashes. Like, I remember when AD beat the Trailblazers a couple years ago, I remember I was in Hawaii while it was happening, and I remember saying, like, that might be the best player in the NBA, you know?
Did you watch Jamal Murray against the Utah Jazz? Back-to-back 50-point game? This is what I'm saying, is that players are capable of that, especially in the first round. There's a lot of players capable of that. LeBron James
Can I make the case for why I think AD is a little different, though? Okay. He's hashtag built different, as the Lakers like to say. But I wish you guys could have seen Adam's face there. But so – the national championship game that I did the Limited Upside pod with Mike Prada and Ben Epstein. And
didn't have anybody on, huh?
What's that?
Didn't have anybody on.
Yeah, you're right. You did it too. So Ben talked about the national championship game that AD played in, and he was awful offensively and was very good defensively and dominated that game.
He was like the MVP of the game, I think, with 0 points or something like
that. Yeah, he was shot really poorly, but still was very clearly the best player on the team, and their team won. And my question, like, when I think about this and when I was figuring out a way to frame this for you, is because I think AD is either the best defensive player in the NBA or very close to it. And in order to be the most talented player in the NBA, how good do you have to be offensively? And I think he's very good offensively too, in terms of the tools that in the ways that he can score. Now, I think there's a case that, you know, all right, let's not get ahead of ourselves. His ability to facilitate leaves a lot to be desired sometimes. But like, just in terms of raw talent and making the most of that talent, what he did in game one was just, it was mind blowing.
Would he be doing this if you swapped LeBron James with Paul George? Would we be on the same run talking about the same thing, do you think?
Well,
because that's a really good player in Paul George.
You need to find a player who's like somewhere close to LeBron as a facilitator, because I don't think Paul George is.
With Ben Simmons?
That's a good example. Probably not, because I think, I mean, Simmons, like, this, it's really going to hurt the spacing or whatever. But, yeah. My point remains is that
I just, I think he's fantastic. Like, we're arguing whether or not we probably both think he's a top five player. And, you know, like, I don't know that that's disrespectful once we're talking about guys like Kevin Durant out there, Kawhi Leonard, who has two championships as the best player on that team. Like, it's not that disrespectful. What I would say is that he has looked absolutely unguardable, and it doesn't look like there is a single player in the NBA that can match up with him offensively. Mm-hmm. You can say the exact same thing about a Kevin Durant. That's why he's in that conversation as well. So, yeah. So I think there's guys like that. But to me, I'm sorry, LeBron James only missed the playoffs one time. That was last year with an injury and with players so horrible. I mean, I heard at one point they were the greatest core of all time, but so horrible. LeBron James has only ever missed the playoffs once, and that was with the greatest young core in the history of basketball. That's the only time he has done it. You throw that one time out, and he's always there. So I'm sorry. He still has the crown.
I don't know where you heard that from. Any last tidbits that you're kind of looking for in terms of the way that we want to look at the Lakers, the way that, you know – like I sent the tweet out there, and Ryan Blackburn, who covers the Nuggets out there, quote tweeted it, because I said that, you know, this team, this Lakers team, feels pretty special. They might, Adam, win an NBA championship only having lost three games.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, for sure. Yep.
And that doesn't happen very often. They could also, by the way, get better next year. Yeah, like they could potentially. So my question to you, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, again, understanding my own biases here. To me, it feels potentially dynastic.
Yeah.
Where are you at on that?
I mean, of course, anytime there's a champion, you look at that team and say, okay, do they have staying power? This team does. LeBron James is that by far the biggest question there, because,
yeah,
you know, everybody remembers old Kobe, but old Kobe arrived abruptly. He got injured, and then it took him a year to come back. And then when he came back, he wasn't the same, because at that age, no matter how good you are, coming back from an injury is tough. Now, maybe that doesn't happen. Knock on wood, I hope it doesn't, because I like LeBron a lot. I like watching him play. But that's the thing that's kind of sticks in the back of your mind. But there's no question. The one thing I'll say about that I've been thinking about, the Nuggets came back from 2-3-1 deficits. And I think that there's no – I'm not trying to obviously diminish anything the Denver Nuggets did. But this bubble is different than the regular playoffs, because you don't have to get on that plane and go and listen to the other team's fans. And I know that probably doesn't affect the superstars like AD and LeBron too much. They've been through that. They've done it enough. But there is something too. Once you get momentum in a series, you just keep it going, because you don't have to switch environments. You're in the exact same – nothing else changes. It's just the game. So maybe that plays a little bit into it. But the one thing is, if they do get through this series with all five games or less, I mean, that there's just no questioning how good of a run that was.
Another version of that I've been thinking about a lot is that, like, we are in a bit of an era of specialization, right? Like, where like, you're the shooter – you facilitate when our main guy isn't facilitating. Like, you have, while it's an era of positionless basketball, people still do have very clearly defined roles.
Yeah.
And, you know, the difference between a shooter who's on, like, who's on the court specifically to shoot and is such a good shooter that you overlook other aspects of his games that have a hole. Well, if another player who is a little bit better rounded, if he now becomes just a better shooter,
right,
that now becomes the gap between those two roles shrinks. And I think here with the Lakers, they have a bunch of guys who are okay-ish shooters, but they aren't like specialists. They've never been specialists, and they can do other stuff. And I think when their ability to do the other stuff, well, that's going to carry over, because the other stuff they have to do is just defend. And then if they can then go out, the Lakers are undefeated in games that they have shot 30% or better on 3-point.
That's not even the best stat. Though, if you really want to talk about how dominant, and you really want to hype up how dominant this Lakers team is, that 54, I think it's 54-0 record when you have a lead going into third.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen by accident. That's not an accidental stat right there. So there's enough indicators there with this team. But like you said, I think they're going to get better. I do see the Lakers fans pivoting to this is a great supporting cast. I don't think it's true. I think the thing that, for me personally, when you have two players that are that good, everybody's just 20% better.
Yeah.
I don't think you take those guys off of that. And I'm not. This is no punishment of the Lakers. They put these guys together for a specific reason.
That's a better way to put it than I've seen other ways. Where, like, if you just move these role players off to other teams, they aren't. Not,
yeah, exactly. And then that way, this is why I think the Lakers will be even better next year, is a lot of role players are good if they're 20% better all of a sudden. And that's and that's the benefit of having that caliber of star in LeBron and AD. They don't need to be compensated for on the defensive end. They don't need to be compensated for on floor spacing. They don't really need to be compensated in any way. So you just get guys that are good players around them.
Yep. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, that's actually a perfect segue into the best duos of the last 20 years, given the way you framed that. So sit tight. We're going to pay a couple bills, and we'll talk about that. I'm curious, before we get into the specifics and the order of your list and all of that stuff, and as you guys know, this is a Friday episode. Every Friday while there's basketball going on, Adam and I put together a power rankings list. Usually
these are silly. These are silly power rankings, but they're fun. Actually, I took this one seriously. You're going to hate it.
I think they're silly, but I prefer these power rankings to like the general power rankings that I tend to see out there.
Are you ready to be mad? Are you ready to be upset?
I'm a little nervous. I'm a little nervous because I'm very partial to this AD and LeBron pairing, but I am very curious in like what you look for in a great duo. Like what are the specifications here that you're defining greatness by?
So I didn't want to make this a reductive list. This duo won so many championships, ergo they are number one, right? That's easy to do, and that I think that would make it less interesting.
Kobe would show up on it way too often, and you can't have that.
I wanted to look at what the list was, just the duo. How did it fit together? What was their imprint on the success of that team? How did it affect them? So there's some of these teams that were great duos, but they were really had two, three, a third and a fourth guy on the team that elevated that of them as well. So you didn't necessarily even think of them in terms of duo. Whereas the guys at the top, you 100% thought of as duos, and that was why they were great. So,
all right, let's kick this off. Who do you have? 12?
I have 12. I'm just going to give you the honorable mentions because we'll make all this right. A list. Shaq and Wade got honorable mention. Shaq and Dwayne Wade. Shaq was, he was really good. Still a pretty dominant player. But to me, that was more of an incredible Wade run in the finals and down the stretch of that.
Dallas Mavericks fans everywhere just like, go away.
I put this one as probably a dishonorable mention, but Harden and Chris Paul. I have to be the one guy on earth. Again, this is not in the top 10. I have to be the one guy on earth that at least gives this team credit for almost doing it. I know almost it doesn't count for a lot for a lot of people.
Participation trophy, Adam.
Well, there's a couple other participation trophies on this one, but the Harden CP3 is like becomes a punchline now, and it's sad because there is a lot of more beloved duos out there that didn't get nearly as close as those two did, beating a pretty great team. But alas, I'm not going to cape for them. I'm just making the point. Number 10 on my list. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire.
This is a good one. This is a really, really good one.
You
ended the last segment talking about not having to make up for them in other aspects of the court. And I think both of those guys, you had to make up for them in other aspects of the court.
They just tried to outscore you. I mean, that was the MO of this team. And also, you weren't, you know, you think about those teams, they just had good players on it. They had shooters. They had a lot of good shooters around them over those years. But more to the point, it was a pick and roll. It involved both guys. It utilized both guys' skills. It wasn't like a little bit of your turn, my turn. No, it was those two guys in the pick and roll, and it was a catch-22 no matter how you defended it.
Yeah. And also, by the way, pushed the sport forward a really long ways. And I think they deserve credit for that.
So, number 9 on here, Kobe and Powell. This is number 9.
Good Lord. I'm all right. All right. That'll do it for this episode of
Kobe and Powell. So
all they did was win back-to-back championships.
Well, I think most of the guys on this list, Suns won at least one championship. Most of them won multiple. So Kobe and Powell were great. Obviously, I mean, they're the top 9 duos of the last 20 years. That's pretty good. Some great players on that. You know, I thought Lamar Odom was a fantastic player. They had
one of the better six men that we've ever seen.
To me, there was Kobe way up here, and there was Powell, who was really good. I mean, anytime you're the second best player in a championship, that's really good. A lot of the other guys I have on this duo, we're talking about. I think they're a little more equal. You know, a little more equal there. That's why they're 9 to me.
The one thing I'll say about I think that Kobe Powell, especially when it was Kobe Powell and Odom out there together, like the caliber of basketball that they were playing there was so much. Like, I know it's hard for some people to be objective about the Lakers, but that was an objectively fun team to watch.
That's definitely, I don't have objectively fun. Okay. It wasn't fun in 2009. The Tim Duncan, Tony Parker duo is now number 8 for me. And the reason this isn't higher, because look, this duo won 4 championships together. Mm-hmm. The reason it's not higher is because it's not really a duo. I've never actually referred to the Tim Duncan, Tony Parker duo before.
Right, yeah.
It's a trio with Manu Ginobili as the third guy there. But if you did just break it down into those two guys, they did complement each other very well. I mean, obviously having a perimeter-oriented player, an inside-oriented player, and they just had an enormous amount of success with a lot of different versions of themselves.
If I had my choice here, I would have flipped the last two, because I think Kobe and Powell were more of a duo than Parker and Duncan. But like what you and I were talking about before we actually went on the air here regarding Duncan was that, like, I actually think the superstar duo here was actually Duncan and Pop. Like, it's just
felt weird to put a coach on there. And
yeah, I mean, it feels like a very it feels like a very NCAA thing to do. But sure. I just think if you're looking for like what was the engine and rudder to that era of Spurs basketball, those guys are there. And I don't mind putting Pop there just because it was such a unique situation with the way that he was allowed to run that team.
The longevity, they also deserve a mention for that. I mean, this is the longest duo. That duo was together for over a decade. Like, that's pretty rare, so they get some points up there. The next duo, this is my most controversial one. I think they might be too high, but I'm not sure. KD and Russ.
Yeah, I think they're too high.
Because the teams didn't have quite success, and I think you could say that because, you know, and unlike, I think, LeBron and AD, the role players maybe don't fit quite as much because both of those guys are best when they're sort of just attacking and getting theirs, so to speak. But at the end of the day, they were both really dominant during their height individually. I mean, there were talks about both of them being the MVP in the same years. So they were an incredible 1-2 punch. And like so many teams, their day, their moment was blotched out by the Warriors, which – again, it's hard. A lot of teams are, you know, got buried during Michael Jordan's reign because there was just no beating those Bulls. Same thing's happening with the Warriors, where if KD and Russ had one title, just one, I don't think it'd be controversial at all if we even had them in the top 5 duos of the last 20 years.
Also, if they have one title, KD probably never goes to Golden State.
Right. So maybe, yeah, exactly. So it diminishes a lot. That changes a whole bunch of stuff. KD and Russ were really good in their day. The game has moved so far away from Russell Westbrook that I think people are going to be stuck with this idea that he was never impactful. He was incredibly impactful at the height of his
Oklahoma also days. One of the all-time what-ifs, just in terms of like without changing history too much, one of the all-time what-ifs is like, what if Scottie Brooks doesn't play Kendrick Perkins?
Yeah.
And rolls with KD at the stretch 4 and Serge Ibaka at the 5 and just
loud. That's the new mold.
We saw, by the way, like what Russell Westbrook looks like with super modern spacing, where even at this stage of his career, they were able to make him relatively
with KD useful on the court with him. Yeah, I mean,
right.
So I don't know. Those two guys, they're the weirdest fit in here because they are the ones that don't have success going forward now. You know, all these guys, the rest of these guys, I think are a little less controversial, but LeBron and Kyrie come in number 6 for me.
That's a good, I mean, they took down the 73 win Warriors. I kind of understand like why the placing is here.
You think it's too high?
Kinda.
So let me say this, because I'm not a Kyrie guy and I never really was even at his height. That was the best LeBron. I think that like 2016 LeBron is probably the peak LeBron or close as you get. But Kyrie and LeBron in that finals reached a whole other level. And okay, in aggregate, compare them to some of the other guys who sustained the success. We talked about Duncan and Parker, how long, 10, you know, a decade plus of those guys playing at that level. Kyrie and LeBron reached a higher level than those guys by a lot for a very short window of time, mm-hmm. really like three games. I mean, it was really a whole playoff run, but really those three games to end the finals were just, I would put the way that they performed together and sort of in concert with each other, I put that up with any of the guys on this list over their three-game peak.
They became a meme. LeBron and KD, or LeBron and Kyrie, were like, you have LeBron's 40 or whatever he scored in that game, and then you had Kyrie's like 38 or whatever it was that he scored in that game. Like that box score, anytime you have two people doing just phenomenal work, they throw up that box score as like the is what the summary of, of what is going on there. I mean, yeah. And like, you also just have to give credit. Like we talked, you just talked a second ago about how the Warriors, Michael Jordan an era a little bit,
right?
You know, where they wiped out some of the greatness that could have existed. Well, they weren't even great enough to wipe out this duo. So I think they deserve some extra points for that.
Definitely. Next one I have on here is Steph and Clay. And this one, these guys changed the game. And I know that the as a duo, they only ended up winning one. Because after that, the duo was KD and Steph.
Right.
And they get docked a few points for me because they were a trio to me, Draymond Green. And really, Andre Iguodala. They were a death lineup. There was a reason there was like a five-man lineup that really unlocked the best of all of them. And Draymond was a big part of that. But I still have to put Steph and Clay up here because they sustained it for – quite a while where they both felt like if they were even just one inch of space open, they were going to make every shot that they put up. Completely changed the game of basketball. And I mean, 73 wins, 67 wins a title. They get this to me. They get it above LeBron and Kyrie.
Imagine if that pair, so KD tears his Achilles in that Toronto Raptors series. Imagine if Clay doesn't get hurt and Steph and Clay and Draymond figure out a way to beat that Raptors team, which I still thought they could have.
I think they would have. I'll go further than you. I'll take it a step further. I think they would have without KD because KD went down, but you're right. It was Clay. They almost had to go back to being the old Warriors, and it would have been a kind of a cool little one last hurrah if they proved it once and for all.
Yeah, I mean, I know nobody was happy to see KD get hurt, obviously, but just from a story standpoint – if KD is not there and then those guys go out and win, like that cements that era of Warriors basketball is like, okay, yeah, they deserve all the praise that they got.
Yeah. All right, number four, LeBron and Dwayne Wade. This is number four. It's a little crazy.
So this one's tough. I want to hear about it because this is an interesting one because this is a trio. Like this was a
– No, it wasn't. This one is more of a legit – it's like – and I'm not trying to say anything from Chris Bosh. He was great. It's like Kevin Love to me. There was a clear who was the third. Okay. And like when we talked about Duncan Parker and Ginobili, there were years it felt like Ginobili was maybe got higher up on the ticket. Mm-hmm. You never felt like that with Chris Bosh. It was Wade and LeBron. We always knew that. So those two guys, there was a little bit of overlap, I think, with their skill sets, a little bit. At their best, they were just overwhelming on both ends of the court. They gave us some of the greatest highlights. They were – I think that 2003 team defensively was one of the most fun defenses to watch in large part because of how fast they were at covering ground around the court, both of them collectively. So they get up there really high, but there was just a little bit of overlap in a way that I don't think there are with the top three. The top three to me, there just was no wasted sort of skill set.
Yeah, I hugely agree there. And just like with Nash and Amari, I would also give LeBron and Wade some credit because they – like this whole switch everything amoeba defense that a lot of people are, a lot of teams are employing right now. Like that kind of started there. And when like people think, wow, you had LeBron, you had Wade and you had Bosh. And at one point they had Ray Allen. Like how does anybody stop that team? Mike Miller was still, was still decent in that stretch. But really when they looked the most just terrifying was when they were switching everything and they were getting out and running and you had alley-oops from Wade going to LeBron and it felt mean in some stretches. I remember quick tangent here, but remember Linsanity when that was going on?
Of course.
And then the night that Linsanity ended, you remember where it ended? He went down and played in Miami and I remember just thinking like going into that game because all of the headlines were about it.
Yeah.
And they just picked on him and they ended that entire story. That entire run just came crashing down that night.
They went 2-for-2 in the finals. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to say that there was a lot of other circumstances, but the three duos ahead of them, so far, undefeated.
Hmm. All right. So who's up next?
So shock you, but it's actually Steph and KD.
I mean,
Steph and KD. Now here's the thing. That duo was unstoppable. They never lost, and they didn't really get close to losing. But
yeah,
it wasn't a duo again. I'd love to see what a team with Steph, KD, Alex Caruso, Danny Green. You know what I mean? Like role players on it. I'd love to see what that was. Instead, they had Draymond at the height of his powers, one of the best defensive players of all time, most versatile defensive players. They had Klay Thompson alongside him. You know, Andre Iguodala alongside him. They had a phenomenal team. So while I don't think there was any overlap there. In fact, in sort of a little bit of a different way, as we talk about the other players, it wasn't just in the skill sets. It was also in the style of play. There was no overlap. The Warriors with KD allowed you to play that beautiful passing game where everybody was moving and the shots were flying and it was awesome. They also let you slow it down and throw it to your 7-foot awesome one-on-one player who nobody could guard. And you could play in the half court slow iso ball. So they made them literally unguardable. And it was proven as much in the playoffs against everybody's best shot was never close.
I guess Houston, you just talked, you know.
Oh, Houston, you're right. That's why they deserve the honorable mention.
The only entire reason they got an honorable mention is because they got close.
Exactly.
All right, so that's number three. Who's number two?
LeBron and AD gets my number two. There's a lot of recency bias here. We got to see him close out. I can look like a fool if the Lakers blow this stretch. But look, man, LeBron in some ways looks like he's better than ever. In aggregate, I don't know when you put everything together, but there's no question he's the smartest, most confident, most comfortable player he's ever been. Does he have the after boosters that he used to? Probably not, although in small purses it looks like he kind of does.
Did you see that dunk?
Of course I saw it. So he still has like a lot of his athleticism when need be. Anthony Davis appears to be approaching the best version of himself. Like, I mean, he's right. I mean, he's in his prime, but I don't know how much better than this he will get. So he's already there. And they don't overlap. They actually fit. They fit so well that it made me go back and think about all of the bigs that LeBron has played with. And he's played with some great ones, but he hasn't played with like an athletic big like this. Like Chris Bosh, very skilled, you know. You know, had Big Z, had Kevin Love, you know, he's had some bigs in the day, but watching Anthony Davis just out athlete everybody on top of outskilling everybody, it really does just make you think like, oh yeah, he hasn't really ever had that. And it really does remind you of one of the greatest duos ever. But you can comment on this one first before we get to number one.
I mean, if it was anybody else, we would have had problems.
You know what? You know me, Anthony. I hate. Yeah. I keep it 100. I hate the Lakers. I'd love to knock them down.
I wish several more people just came out and said it. I wish more people just came out and said, "I effing hate the Lakers."
No, you don't. Everybody's open about that. Like you said, everybody either loves the Lakers. First of all, Lakers fans do make up 50% of all NBA fans, means the other 50% hate the Lakers. So there is a love hate there. But no, look. But I want, before we get to the number one, LeBron and AD. Did we miss anything, or we talked about them enough?
No. Right? Well, I mean, we talked about them earlier. The thing that just kind of blows my mind here with LeBron and AD is, like, a lot of the stuff that we have been saying about all of these other duos, you can basically combine all of that. Like, the fact that Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire, you could run that pick and roll. Yep. They were part of that. Same thing applies for LeBron and AD. They're just bigger.
Right. And better defensively. Yeah.
And better defensively. We talked about, you know, the ways that KD and Steph allowed for a lot of like the beautiful basketball that was able to, well, the way that the Lakers defend is because you don't have to make up for what AD and LeBron offer to the team. So I think
probably the best defensive players on the court when they're locked in.
Especially when LeBron like really defensive. Focuses in, like, just ask Jamal Murray, who definitely didn't get fouled ever when they But I think
the funniest was SportsCenter tweeting that one out with like LeBron locks up Jamal and it's the slow motion of him just hacking the hell out of him. Like, all right, well, okay.
But I think to me, like, what I'm always going to remember with this duo and watching them play is just they look like monsters. They feel like a cheat code out there because they are so big, they are so athletic, but then they're also so skilled. Yeah. It just seems unfair at sometimes.
Dwight really adds to that too, because he just adds that third hyper athlete that you're like, oh God, if by chance you had guys that could shut down the first two, the third one's going to get loose. But to me, they got to win more championships to reach the level. I mean, even putting them ahead of Steph Curry.
I hope they have enough time too.
Even Steph and KD, you know, like they got it done really easily as well. They had two runs that were just like this Laker, or more or less like this Laker run. So, you know, it feels a little sacrilegious putting them ahead, but they just this year, I mean, they just look like they fit like peanut butter and jelly. But number one, they have to get to it.
Is it LeBron and Alex Caruso? Or?
Murray and Jokic. You saw what happened in this playoff. No, I'm just kidding. It's Kobe and Shaq.
David sent us an email in between segments. You guys have to put Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert there.
No, Kobe and Shaq got it done three times. And even though Kobe, I think, at that version of himself wasn't the version of himself that we know, he was still a hell of a player. And then, of course, Shaq had arguably one of the most dominant three-year runs of any player ever. And so that duo, Bron and AD, are like one of the few – duos that could maybe surpass it, but I think the clock is maybe it's already too late for that. Maybe not. Maybe LeBron surprises us and he just they bust out some runs like this. But Kobe and Shaq, they have to get number one.
That Kobe and Shaq thing, like the thing that I wish that blew me away with what Kobe was doing back then was that he was expected to be like top five scorer in the NBA, and then anytime the other team had a perimeter scorer, he was tasked with that assignment. And then Shaq was just, remember Shaq, the way that I would summarize like watching Shaq play was, remember the I think it was the second Matrix movie, where maybe even the first, but there was a fight with him and all of the Agent Smiths, and they all kind of jump on top of him. And then you hear like the big bass beats, and then they all start flying upward. That's always what it felt like when Shaq would get fouled by like five people in the key, and they were the Kings, so they even wore black uniforms. So it looked like a whole bunch of Agent Smiths like flying up in the air. I don't think we're ever going to – I mean, nobody is really built like Shaq, so I don't think we're ever going to see a Shaq again. And I think that's really what is going to stop us from, you know, maybe not stop, but that's going to be really difficult for LeBron and AD and any other duo to top, is just how – what kind of a force of nature Shaq was for those 3 years. I don't know if that's replicable in any way whatsoever.
Two words for you.
Mm-hmm.
Bobo.
Really quick before we get out of here, the Philadelphia 76ers have agreed to terms with Doc Rivers, a 5-year deal to go coach there.
Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Way down.
Yeah, same.
Way down. Like the one thing that we now know about Doc Rivers is that he doesn't tend to handle volatile locker rooms all that well. And I mean, we've seen it now for two or three pretty public flameouts. So that makes me a little nervous.
It makes you elated. Get out of here. Like, I can tell what false eyes are, Anthony, but go on, get to your next news.
What's interesting now is that what that means for now the Clippers, and now you have Gentry, who is linked to the Sacramento Kings. Gentry is also linked, by the way, to Doc Rivers' own bench in Philadelphia. So we have quite a few dominoes that are going to be falling. We have the remainder of these finals to get to. If they last all the way to the next time Adam and I talk, then I'll be excited to celebrate the Lakers' victory in that episode. But after that, we jump right into an offseason that might only be a couple months long. So we're going to have to squeeze a whole bunch of information in a very short amount of time, according to what Adam Silver was saying in his last public appearance. Please have a very safe and fun weekend. We have playoff baseball. We have playoff finals in the NBA. Football is in full swing right now. Hockey just ended, but you have college football, and all of that, by the way, is covered here on the Locked On Network. So find your favorite team and then listen and stay informed about them every single day of the week. Have a good one.